We come on this loop, John B. My grandfather and me. Around Nassau town we did roam, drinking all night. Got into a fight. Well, I feel so broken.
You're home, folks, right here. You get the blessing. Isn't this great music?
So hoist up the John B. sail.
Another morning, waking up to the Beach Boys.
This is You Get the Blessing.
The captain ashore, let me go home.
I'm Bo Mitchell. My co-host is the brilliant Dr. Bob Belts. And you...
Always happy to be with the brilliant Bo Mitchell.
Well, you're the stars of this show.
We love being with you on Sunday mornings.
Why not listen to this? Who's the lead singer on this?
I think it's Mike.
You do?
Anyway, boat song. We needed a boat song this morning, Bo.
No kidding, because occasionally we veer off from our regular program and do a thing called Tips from the Team, where Bob and I just talk on specific topics and share mostly Bob's wisdom and my nonsense and blend it together, hopefully to benefit you that are listening. So thank you all for letting us know you're tuning in on Sunday mornings. It's very encouraging to us. We thank KOA for allowing us to be on the air with You Get the Blessing, and we do hope what we have to say today blesses you. And I've just asked Bob if he would share with us some specifics, enlighten us as to a incredible big-time motion picture that's going to be released in just a few days called The Dawn Treader. And let's start, Bob, by saying, let me just say, Bob's a senior pastor at Highline Community Church. He is preaching just about every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. He's a great leader at the church. He's also an author has for 12 years now been a part of the motion picture industry along with Philip Anschutz and Walden Media. So would give us some background on how Phil had this dream for impacting what goes on in Hollywood.
Well, you know, like I think like a lot of people, when we live in a world where the media has a tremendous amount of influence on what happens, and certainly major motion pictures oftentimes really influence our culture. And I think that Phil was just a guy who had no, previously it wasn't like he decided he wanted to be a film mogul or something, but really felt like I wish somebody would do something to utilize this for good and, kind of make more films that are family friendly and can be a positive influence on people's lives. And one morning, I think just kind of looked in the mirror and said, why don't I do it? And it was it's been a tremendous influence, really. I mean, that at the time that Walden Media started, there weren't a lot of family films. And if you look today, it's the success of Walden and kind of the example that they've set has led a lot of other of the companies to kind of beef up the family film industry.
So I've been hanging my hat lately on a verse in the first chapter of the book of James where it says, don't just be hearers of the word, period. And then it says, do something with it. So Phil is a hands-on, two-fisted, tastefully aggressive businessman and Christian, and I think that's a powerful story you just shared about Phil saying, okay, I've observed this, I can, and so I am going to do something about it.
Yeah, and the last 12 years, Walden has really, as you know, produced some of the great films, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, Amazing Grace, Bridge to Terabithia, Because of Winn-Dixie. I mean, I could just go on and on about some of the super films that have come out of there. But what we're really excited about is that this week, the third film in the Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, opens on Friday. So it's really fun to be able to kind of introduce our audience to that story and that film, maybe a little bit about C.S. Lewis, and kind of set the stage for what people are going to have a great time and walk away with some kind of powerful, meaningful stuff from that film.
So let's just say, without being egotistical here, that you're in the vault right now. You're in the vault. You're talking to one of the guys who was sitting in the room when the C.S. Lewis properties were originally purchased, and Bob would be the first guy in all humility to say, you know, Phil's leading the charge here, but I promise you, Bob has been playing a major role in that charge, and he wouldn't say that. He would certainly wouldn't say it publicly on this program, but I'm saying it on his behalf because I don't know anybody else in the movie business but you and Phil, and I appreciate that Phil's recognized your talents and the contributions you make to this, Bob. So start for our listeners just by giving some background on C.S. Lewis and what a brilliant man he was and what he was trying to accomplish way back in the 40s when the Chronicles of Narnia were first written.
Well, Lewis is an amazing guy. He was a professor first at Oxford University and then later became the head of the Department of Renaissance and Medieval Literature at Cambridge. So we're talking about a pretty sharp cookie. And I know, you know, particularly for me, he's kind of one of my heroes simply because when I began to explore, you know, Jesus and Christian faith in my college days, I was getting bombarded from all sides with a message at the university level, at least, that you had to take your brain out to be a Christian. And here was C.S. Lewis, you know, one of the most brilliant scholars that I know of, that had wrestled through that problem. And literally his quote was that he came to faith kicking and screaming. You know, it was like he didn't want to believe, and yet he'd been challenged, by the way, by good friends like J.R.R. Tolkien that wrote The Lord of the Rings. These guys used to hang out at a little pub in Oxford called they nicknamed it the Bird and the Baby. It was called the Eagle and the Child or something. And
you've been to that pub?
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
Was there a third one that hung with them?
Oh, there was a group called the Inklings. Okay. And they were all Dorothy Sayers, some real, real well-known British, you know, literary people. But anyway, Lewis had, you know, from a position of really atheism as a young man, as a professor, had thought very carefully through the claims, the issues of faith. Did it make any sense? And again, when he got on his knees one night, he became the most reluctant convert in all of England. It's a great quote, but he just wrote, he was a prolific writer and wrote a lot of things, both in terms of, literature, just generally things that are still used in academic circles, and then theology. He wrote books on issues like the problem of pain, Mere Christianity, which is a real classic that was based on a series of radio shows he did during World War II. But then he wrote these just fabulous pieces of fiction. And in 47, 48, he began to write a series of books for kids called The Chronicles of Narnia. He ended up writing 7 books. And at a point in time, he said, "I wrote these books for children so that their parents would read them to them so that I could say to their parents what I wanted to say to them." And so they're children's books that are loaded with very, very rich and meaningful kinds of themes in them. And that's what Dawn Treader is like.
So I can't say this as eloquently as you would say it, but as I was taught this, Lewis also had the motivation that if you can lay a track down in a young person's mind pertaining to salvation, the story of Christ, his death on the cross, his resurrection, his desire to have a relationship with us through faith, if you can just lay that track down, even just subtly in their minds, they will return to it as adults or as young adults. Is that somewhat what you've been taught as his motivation for that, that all the symbolism in the Chronicles were for the parents to read, but hopefully too, these kids are going to pick up some of what I'm saying here?
Yeah, he was, he was a big believer in the power of story. And I think stories and even much of spirituality, we experience at a level that's a lot different from the head. You know, there's kind of a heart issue here. And when you tell a story, it sort of impresses us at a little bit different level. And I, you know, he was asked real, you know, blatantly on a number of occasions, why did you write this? And in 1961, in response to a letter that a child, he always corresponded with kids, by the way. I mean, you can actually get books that are C.S. Lewis's letters to children. And he loved getting letters from kids, and he'd always write him back. And in 61, he kind of said, here's what I was trying to do in the Chronicles. And he kind of explained each one of them, that Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe was kind of the story of Jesus and the cross and the resurrection, that Prince Caspian, which was the second book, and we've made that movie along with Lion and Witch, was a story about return to the true faith, because it takes place at a time in Narnia, I think, maybe very relevant to our own days, where people had lost faith, that didn't believe that Aslan really existed, who's kind of the Christ figure, and they'd sort of lost their way. And so it's a story about the return to the true faith. And then he wrote Dawn Treader. It was the third book that he wrote in the series. And he said that he wanted to write a story about the spiritual life. And what he did was he kind of took the a little bit of sort of the classic feeling of the Odyssey, and wrote a book about a ship's journey from Narnia through the islands that were off the coast to the east of Narnia. And ultimately, it's a story that takes us all the way to the end of the world in Aslan's country. And along the way, the Dawn Treader, which is the name of the ship in the story, the Dawn Treader stops at a whole series of islands, and at each of these islands, there's sort of a story within a story, and lots of kind of fun things take place. But he's trying to make a point at each of these experiences. So themes of grace, themes of faith, themes of temptation, themes of transformation. It's loaded with all of these great life lessons. And frankly, you know, I've got to say, even though for those of us that are you know, who have a relationship with Christ and the spiritual life is, you know, central to us, these are themes that are life themes. I mean, everybody experiences this, and I think there's a universal sense to the story that people resonate with.
And in the sequence of the Chronicles, this rates with you as one of the best, one of the greatest of C.S. Lewis's work?
Yeah, you know, I like all of his stuff, but I would say inside the Chronicles, everybody sort of has books that are their favorites. And this is a book that a lot of people, it's their very favorite book. It has some really fun characters. You're introduced to a new character in this book, because the book began with four children that enter into Narnia through this magic wardrobe. And they're two brothers and two sisters. And the two older brothers and sisters at the end of the last story are told they're not coming back to Narnia, that they've gotten too old and they're not coming back. So in this story, the two younger, which is Lucy and Edmund, come back to Narnia, but they bring with them one of the great characters in all of his books, their cousin Eustace. And actually, the opening line in the book is, "There once was a boy named Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it." And he is just a little piece of work, to say the least, when we first meet him. And the story of his transformation, and I'll just tell that quick story, because, again, this sort of gives you a flavor for it. So Eustace finds himself—
Let me interrupt and say, if you just joined us, we're doing what we call a tips from the team here. It's Bob Belts, and I'm Bo Mitchell. We're just sharing on You Get the Blessing today about a movie being released December 10th called Voyage of the Dawn Treader, one of C.S. Lewis's works. And Bob is involved with Philip Anschutz and Walden Media Group, and has been right on the cutting edge of the Voyage of the Dawn Treader from the start. So we're just sharing some specific features of the movie that we thought would give you some insight and encouragement as you go to watch the movie and pick up on all the symbolism and messages that C.S. Lewis intended the book and now the movie to be about for all of us. So start at the beginning there again.
Well, Eustace's story, which is kind of one of the central stories in the book, is that the two younger kids have to go live with Eustace during the summertime. The parents have come to America, and their older brother's gone off to college. And Eustace is just a little snot, you know, a spoiled little snot. And And he teases them relentlessly about their, you know, this fantasy place called Narnia. And then suddenly he finds himself in Narnia through a very, very cool sequence where, you know, I won't spoil it. You got to see how they get there, which is one of the great opening scenes of any movie. And suddenly he's in Narnia, and this place he didn't believe in. And in the course of the journey, he ends up turning into a dragon. And they go to an island. There's a dragon's lair there, which is, you know, the treasure that dragons have found and brought back to their place. And Eustace falls asleep on the dragon's lair, and he wakes up a dragon. And it's a great image of us in some states, because all of us have this dragon inside. And through becoming a dragon, it really sort of breaks him. You know, he realizes that he's really been a little twit. And yet when the time comes, when he just desperately wants to be a little boy again, he tries taking the dragon skin off himself, and he can't get it off. And the more he scratches away, every time he gets the top layer off, suddenly there's another layer and he's still a dragon. And he takes another layer off and he's still a dragon. And eventually it's only by the intervention of Aslan, who is the great lion in all of the chronicles. And Aslan comes and really lets him know that only he can de-dragon Eustace. And Aslan cuts to the core of his being and is able to remove this dragon skin, and Eustace becomes a boy again. And the whole theme is this theme of transformation and what we wrestle with internally, and how we find ourselves oftentimes in a place where we can't change ourselves. We really need, we really need God to touch us and work in our life. And so that's just like this fun story, and the special effects of the dragon and Eustace becoming a dragon and all of this in the film, they're spectacular, but a real profound message in the midst of a very fun story.
So for all ages?
It is for all ages. I would say that, you know, very young kids, there's sort of a scary sequence with a sea serpent in the film, and that I think some kids might be too young for, but it's rated PG. It's not a G-rated film, I think, because of that kind of a thing. But generally speaking, it's real family friendly, and again, we're encouraging. We're going to actually take a whole group out of Highline to the film on Sunday afternoon. And we're doing some fun activities around the film on Friday night before the film opens. We're doing some things to kind of get people prepared for it. But
so if you just walked in off the street and never heard of C.S. Lewis and just wanted to be entertained, are you still going to pick up on the symbolism and the meaning? And is it going to be an impactful movie for you, or are you just going to be lost?
Oh, no, it's a really fun film. I mean, it's, you know, kind of in the genre of Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. I mean, it's a fantasy film, and if you don't really catch some of the underlying themes, you'll be really entertained. I mean, you'll walk out of the theater feeling like you've just seen a really, really great movie. But, you know, hopefully it's more for folks, because, again, the message is there. You know, again, it's a huge battle, good against evil, and what they have to overcome to defeat evil. There's a line in the film early on where a magician on Magician's Island, where they've gone to, says, "To defeat the evil without, you first have to defeat the evil within." And which is true. I mean, you know, we live in a world where there's a lot of problems, but before we're really able to take on much of what's wrong with the world, we need to first kind of take a look in the mirror and figure out how do we change what's wrong inside. So again, all of these great kind of themes like that. Temptation and temptation in areas that all of us struggle with. They come to an island where, I shouldn't give all of this away, but they come to an island where they discover a pool that turns everything that's put into it to gold. And there's, you know, they almost come to blows against each other, thinking, if I could control this pool, I can control the world. So the wrestling with greed is in there. There's a spell in a magic book that Lucy tumbles upon that would make you the most beautiful woman in the world, and she's kind of struggling with her own identity and thinking, oh, you know, maybe I should say this spell, you know, and so, you know, kind of vanity and some of those issues we deal with. It's all there. It's really fun.
So I know Phil Anschutz would hate me talking about him publicly, and he's a very private individual, but
I should say, Bo, we always, when we do a show like this, end up having a lot of people calling with, you know, we have scripts, we want to get a movie made,
And
we're really not doing that. It's all that's done out in Los Angeles. We have very little to do with that here, so.
Good, and I'm glad you said that. But I wanted to say this about Phil. People that say he got lucky, he had the right parents, he just hit it at the right time. I find the guy to be as brilliant as anybody I've ever met, and as hardworking and diligent and prepared and cutting edge on everything. So it didn't surprise me when he launched this and asked you to come along. And I'm happy for the success of it and the impact of it in terms of the families that have seen his films. But I was going to ask you, in terms of Hollywood, has that been a tough journey for you two guys, or how is this received there when you're so intent on keeping the core, what C.S. Lewis was trying to say here, as a part of the movies, rather than just making it all sensationalized and Hollywoodized, or however else you'd say it?
Well, you know, first of all, I really haven't had as much of an influence as you say I have. I feel tremendously privileged that I've, you know, even been able to be involved in the process. But I do think that apart from the fact that, that the people that oftentimes invest and put the money up for a film, can have a lot of influence on the kind of films that get made. And Hollywood's a business. So again, at the heart of it, if you make a great film and people respond, and it does well, you're sort of demonstrating to Hollywood that there is a market for this kind of a product, and it really enables more people to make films with this kind of positive message. And yet, you know, it's a collaborative process. Not everybody, probably would be excited about the fact that there are spiritual themes. And so you sort of, you know, you kind of fight it out together and work together and wrestle through the thing. And we've just been, again, I think because of Phil, we've been able to preserve the integrity of these stories. But, it's been challenging. So
I can't even imagine, but congratulations.
We showed this. We showed some clips from it in South Africa last month, where there were 4,000 Christian leaders from 198 countries, and we just kind of showed some of the pieces of the film that really do have spiritual content. And when it was about 30 minutes of clips, and when it finished, the first guy that popped up was a guy that's at Oxford writing a book on C.S. Lewis, and he, in amazement, said, "How did you get all this in a Hollywood movie?" You know, and which was a great sort of affirmation of the fact that, you know, we felt like we'd really accomplished some great stuff here.
Good. And I bet that was encouraging to you and Phil to hear that kind of response. I was going to say, how many more after this we got? Are you going to continue with the Chronicles and produce the balance of the books?
Well, what we're hoping is that people that, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, are saying, you know, why aren't there more family friendly, you know, kinds of films and things? And the reality is that what drives the ability to make these kind of films is that people do go see them. I mean, my encouragement to anybody listening is to, you know, you try and get out on opening weekend, because for Hollywood, it's all about what happens in that first weekend. That's why as a church, we're taking a whole crew on Sunday, but film opens on Friday. And I think that it's a situation where you have to look at, if Dawn Treader does well, then I think we'll have another, we'll be able to make another one in the series. And so we're hopeful. We're hopeful. And again, I think the film is good enough that a lot of people are going to see it and then talk to other people about it. And, you know, that's really a lot of times what makes a film work, is when the word of mouth gets out that, hey, this is a great film, you need to go see.
So the movie is The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And if you're in earshot of this broadcast today, we're just asking you, go watch the movie. You'll be entertained, but you'll also be inspired. There's some life-changing messages sent by this movie. and investment-wise, just tens of millions of dollars, time, energy, intellect, passion. And again, thank you to Phil and to Bob for what they've done. And I just am thankful that we can share this on the program today, because we hope it is encouraging to you that these good things are happening, and it's right there at your theater. So tell everybody in your neighborhood, your church, your school, go see the movie and enjoy it. Wouldn't you say, Bob?
Yeah, you know, and oftentimes we have friends that maybe we wish we could would come to church with us, and they just aren't ready for it. And this is the kind of it's like a tool that has been made available to us where everybody wants to go see a film. And it's really a great discussion starter. It's the kind of the thing that if you invite friends and take them, it kind of opens the door to talk about some of these things that the film portrays. So I'd encourage people to, you know, really to think about reaching out and taking a friend. Reach out to some kids in your neighborhood that maybe couldn't afford to see the film or something like that and take them.
I'll tell you what will happen if they go see the film. They'll get the blessing. We'll see you next week right here on KOA. Thanks for tuning in, y'all.